I'm hoping that we can have a good discussion today. A couple things that we want to try to do, because we know we have another bargaining session coming up on Thursday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we may try to do is to simulate a caucus. The UCF Board of Trustees bargaining team and the United Faculty Florida, the University of Central Florida bargaining team here this afternoon. Because of the circumstances that we're dealing with, I'm going to suggest that we go around and everybody say who they are. And I know there's going to be a temptation. Everybody's going to say their name at one time. We won't hear any names. So I'm going to suggest that we have the chief negotiators or the substitutes, therefore, ask each member of their team who's present to introduce themselves, just so we have that for the record. So, Giovanna, I'll let you go first, please.
Okay, hi, I'm Giovanna Pineda in the Department of History at UCF, and I'm also chief negotiator. That's good.
But he wants you to introduce.
Introduce. This sitting next to me is Scott Launier. He's president of UFF and also associate instructor in writing and rhetoric. Also going around, there's Nina. Could you say her name, your last name?
Orlovskaya.
Yes, and do you want to introduce yourself, please?
So I'm associate professor at the Department of Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering in the College of Engineering Computer Science.
Okay. Irina?
Irina Malendovich, I'm from Criminal Justice Department and I'm instructor.
Okay. And Marie? Oh, Marie, take off the mute.
Press the space bar.
Yeah, there you go.
Hi, I'm Marie Letisse, associate professor in modern languages and literature.
All right, thank you. And that's the UFF-UCF team today.
And what about Richard?
Oh, Richard, do you want to introduce yourself? So he's our community member. He's interested in all the nerdy things we do here. So yes, he also happens to work for the major labor attorneys in town.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Welcome to all the folks from the UFF team. My name is Chuck Riley. I'm going to be subbing as our chief negotiator this afternoon. I'm an assistant vice provost, work in the Office of Contract Compliance and Administrator Support. And Sarah?
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah Potter, Associate General Counsel in the General Counsel's Office.
And Charlie?
Hi, I'm Charlie. I'm a director in CCAS. And also, if you're on mute, which is good because it keeps the ambient noise down, if you hold down the space bar, it unmutes you until you let go. Just a little tip.
Okay, and Briannis?
Hi, I'm Briannis Weston. I'm an administrative assistant for CCAS.
Okay, I think we've got everybody introduced. Thank you all very much for taking the time to introduce yourselves. I want to begin by saying that we appreciate that the UFF has sent us a draft MOU that we can use to begin our conversation this afternoon. Appreciate the time and effort that went into putting that together, and I appreciate the fact that we had a chance to review it before we got together this afternoon and think about some of these things that are proposed within this document. What I would like to suggest that we do is kind of go through that proposed document from front to back. Kind of what I had in mind is using this as a place where we start. There may be some points that we agree or something that will be in a final MOU, and you know, sort of drag that concept out and put it into what's approaching a final version of that document. There may be some points in this draft that when we get to them, we realize we don't really need to include that. It's already been covered someplace else. It's not necessary. Our thinking is that we'd like to keep this document as brief as possible so that it gets clearer when it goes forward for ratification. This document will have to be ratified both by the UFF membership and the Board of Trustees. And our experience is with these kind of things, the simpler the documents are, the faster we can get these things ratified. So that's kind of the plan. Is that okay with the UFF?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So I guess based on what I suggested as a strategy to attack this, might as well start at the beginning and look at a paragraph that I'm going to call the preamble. There are a couple of things that I would like to suggest about the thoughts in that particular paragraph. One word that I wanted to bring up for some discussion perhaps is the word latest in the second line. I guess that's line 7 on the most recent. I think one of the things that we're going to find as time goes on over the next who knows how many weeks, that things are going to change. And with that, the word latest may not be what we agree to today because more things happen beyond today. So saying that the social distancing that has clearly been recommended and seems to be effective, saying just these recommendations rather than latest, because each of these health organizations that have made recommendations may continue to make recommendations, and we don't know what they are and whether they should be part of this or not. So one thing I would offer is that perhaps we strike that word latest. And I actually liked the previous version of this paragraph a little bit better at the end. And just want to mention that. Could say something like the condition shall remain in effect until all appropriate government entities declare an end to the emergency. So some of that language is what you had before, and some of it is language that we'd like to insert there. So the last sentence might read something like, to this end, we agree that the following terms and conditions shall remain in effect until all appropriate government entities declare an end to the emergency.
Okay.
I think on point number one, is there anything, any questions anybody has on that?
Anybody have any questions? So I'm just taking down the notes, and then when we go into caucus, I'll discuss with my team.
Okay. All right. On point number one, I guess we don't see anything. Its sentence is fine. Question is whether it's necessary. The collective bargaining agreement is obviously in force. Federal and state intellectual property is in force. It's not clear to me that that we would need point number one. Sarah, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
No, just in general, we are ascribing to a view that we shouldn't be restating things that are already true. And this just covers our understanding of the collective bargaining agreement as it works now and as we just negotiated in the last round.
Does anyone from UFF, did you have any comments?
Okay, I can move on to point number two. I'd like to recommend a slight change to point number two to make it consistent with the new Article 18 that we've already tentatively agreed to and hopefully will be ratified very, very soon. I'd like to propose that this say something like, instructors shall maintain rights to all course content, even if it is presented in an online format. I think the Article 18 is we got it that both the university and the faculty member have some rights to those course materials. So we think that would be consistent. Point number three, there are three things that I'd like to mention. I'm going to do them backwards. The last sentence we think can be stricken because it's really covered later on in the document. It says if there's something that comes up and we have to get together again. So we think this is something that could suffice to be in one place. So I'd like to suggest that we strike that. And then right above that, my understanding is there are going to be some summer D classes as well. And anything we do for A and C, we would want to do for D as well. And if necessary, summer B. I don't know that any decision's been made yet about summer B. And then we understand what this point is trying to tell us, and there's some agreement actually about it. However, one thing that I wanted to point out, sometimes there are things that happen very rarely, and I can't give you an example right now because none has happened. But sometimes there are just very egregious things that take place and really aren't tied necessarily to a transition from online instruction or from face-to-face instruction to online instruction or some kind of a change due to an emergency. And in those cases, we think it would be totally proper that there might be some repercussions for an employee who just, for lack of a better term, just blows it off. We have seen, you know, there are a couple of student issues that I'm aware of that I think are relatively minor that can be dealt with some consultation with the chair or director. I don't think it's a big deal, but there's a potential. Every so often, there is something that isn't really just tied to the change in modality. And you know, somebody who says, you know, I was just struggling maintaining my original schedule. I had to push due dates back or whatever. No biggie there, you know, that's not any reason for any action. But if there's something, you know, very egregious, somebody's not teaching, someone is AWOL, you know, we think that in those cases, something needs to be done about those.
Chuck, may I?
Yes, ma'am.
May I suggest, could you offer some language then?
I was afraid you were going to say that. But yes, I think that's an eminently fair question Giovanna, and yeah, we'll have to come up with some language. And there's actually a related issue that has come up that I wanted to bring to your attention. We've been asked over the last couple of working days, this really came up at the end of last week, and it has to do with course visitation that's covered in Article 10. And we want to do things in the right way. Right now, all of our classes are basically being offered in an online format. According to Article 10, a chair, director, or supervisor could go in and observe an online course at any time. We understand that for some faculty who began the term teaching in a face-to-face modality, they certainly entered the term with the expectation that they would have at least 2 days notice if somebody was going to visit their face-to-face class. So what we're wondering is if maybe we could agree on a way that we would handle this, and then I would take that as an amendment to my assignment to come up with language for this part of the MOU. But something that we've thought about, but we really want your input on this, is how do we handle this idea of visiting? I think in theory, we could say all these classes are online, chairs and directors, do what you want. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it quite that way anyhow. Mm-hmm. But we no longer have scheduled meeting times. A chair or director can't say, I'm going to walk down the hall, I'm going to go into this class at 10:30 in the morning and observe this person in my department. That's just, and I'm going to tell that person 2 days in advance. Just doesn't work that way right now. So a thought that occurred to us is that we could let all our faculty know that now we are doing this online, and you know, by the end of this week, maybe, or at some point we agree would be reasonable, we say from that point on, the chairs and directors can observe these online classes, but we're preserving the grace period so that faculty would know whether or not somebody might be observing their class. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I just had a quick question. So is this part of trying to make sure people are not blowing off their classes, as you say?
No, that's not. I mean, what I'd already talked about in this point is, in the event that there is something egregious, we don't want to just say, well, sorry that, you know, sorry, Mr. Customer, that's just the way it is this term. This has come up just for different reasons. We've heard from, we haven't heard directly, we've got it indirectly from deans and the Center for Distributed Learning.
Okay.
That chairs are asking, what do I do? Because in some cases, they may want to observe a faculty member, for example, who is a candidate for promotion next year. Mm-hmm. And they want to observe how things go in the classroom. And they say, what do I do now? Before, when it was a face-to-face class, I could just say, today's Monday, I want to come in Wednesday afternoon and observe your class.
So this
would have been simple.
Like,
now what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does the 48 hours mean when things are changing all the time? Even the students that enrolled as face-to-face students and wanted a face-to-face class, now because they're not coming to campus, now because maybe some of them are having to be at home and share childcare responsibilities with somebody. They're not even able to watch a video at the scheduled time. They're having to do it at a different time. So the schedule that we had at the beginning of the term, particularly for the face-to-face classes, just doesn't mean much anymore. So much has changed. So because chairs and directors are asking, can I do this? And it's not, I'm not aware in these cases of any situation other than it would be something that they would normally do to observe faculty teaching their courses, and they're saying, how do I do that now? And I think it's a good question. I'm very glad that they asked it. And as we thought about it, we got this session coming up on Monday. It might be really good to bring this up and just mention it now. Okay.
May I?
It's not an ideal situation, but under the circumstances, I think chairs and directors could notify folks because of changes we've got going on. Maybe they're able to say something tomorrow or Wednesday. By the end of this week, I may be going in and taking a look at some of what you're doing. But it's not, somebody's dining it in to see what a particular person is doing. It's they've customarily done some observation of teaching in the past, and they want to do it again.
You wanted to say something?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to just see if I can clarify for us.
It's number 3.
I got it. And so where we're kind of at with this rewrite and the reason why we're talking about all of this at the same time, right, this question coming up in this section, Chuck, you also said that your side kind of agreed principally to, it's part of this here, right? So what I'm guessing at is, I'm guessing that there's by and large agreement about the third sentence, that we all agree that because of this quick unexpected switch, there shall be no adverse employment or evaluative action arising from the online transition of classes, right? And other disruptions to the teaching protocols. And we're kind of trying to catch, that if this big switch caused people problems, that, we're right, that they shouldn't have to bear all the responsibility for that. Now, where I think I'm also agreeing with you and I'm online with this, I could see from your side where then the next sentence is problematic, because then to say, thus course evaluations will be excluded, kind of covers this wider umbrella than we're really kind of trying to capture in the previous sentence. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess I should have said 4 things. I guess I did want to get to that next sentence that you just brought up, and thank you for helping me out. And reminding me of that. Yes?
Can I first jump in on the third sentence?
Sure.
Okay. Scott, I think that the agreement is that we don't think that there should be adverse employment or evaluative action arising from basically a good faith effort to transition online classes and disruptions that were outside of a employee's or faculty member's control. But we need to carve out what I'm sure will be a very small group of people who didn't make a good faith effort to really transition to online learning or have otherwise gone AWOL for whatever reason. We don't even know whether there will be any such person, but it doesn't really make sense to kind of just let something like that, like I think that's an order of magnitude much greater than someone who was trying their best and just because of everything going on, couldn't quite get to their level of normal performance, which I think is probably everyone at this point. We are all working at slightly probably less stellar performance maybe than we were about a month ago. So anyway, that's kind of our carve out. So I think we probably agree on like 98% of cases, but we want to reserve the capability to take action if there was someone who just simply kind of refused to do their duties at all during this time period, and it wasn't due to something outside of their control. So I know that's kind of a small group, and we'll propose some language, but I'm thinking like good faith standard, something about whether or not it was, you know, something in their control, that kind of thing. And we should, probably should have had a sentence together already, but that's kind of where we were thinking about that. So not looking to evaluate anyone or take any adverse action against someone who made a good faith effort to transition to online courses, if that makes sense. And then I'll let Chuck go on to number four, sentence four.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that's a lot of the language that will, you know, incorporate them. So for the rewrite. Yeah, no, I think that sounds kind of on point.
Can I just want to, and also thinking just about like equal opportunity and all that. So in my department, for instance, Sarah, like it was mostly the people who have been teaching for the last 30, 40 years. So they're in a, you know, they're older category. They did make a good faith effort in trying to do it, but yeah, it's still a little bit of a disaster. So, I mean, I wouldn't want them to be targeted just because they're people who have not used online, never expected to use online, expected to retire just, you know, using the face-to-face mode for the rest of their life. Before we were all stay-at-home order, they were meeting with other faculty on campus to kind of get their classes on Zoom and stuff, but then that was taken away. And now, unfortunately, since we had this, you know, just last week, the Florida stayed at home. They went to Oviedo. They would go to Oviedo to this person's house. But since that, I don't know what they're doing. So I don't want to target a particular group like the 60, you know, the 60 and over category that just didn't expect to ever have to teach online. So I'm just, you know, thinking definitely good faith effort and stuff. But
yeah, I'll definitely keep it in mind when we're drafting the language. You know, we want to be reasonable, of course. And if we can include something about individual hardship, mm-hmm. I think unfamiliarity with the technology could be possibly something that we consider. But I'm not trying to make a real strict test here. We're literally just trying to, if someone totally could have made the transition and didn't, that the type of person that would be subject to some adverse employment action, people who tried their best, even if their try wasn't very good. I mean, I think those people would be safe, for lack of a better term. But again, I don't even know if this will come up. It was just something, it seemed so broad that we thought, you know, someone, if there's a bad actor out there who just isn't doing what they're supposed to do at all, we need to know about that and be able to kind of address that now, because this might be something that goes on into subsequent semesters, or unfortunately just becomes part of our, you know, new normal, depending on where we go from here. So that was our thinking.
All right, thank you, Sarah. Scott, again, I want to thank you for bringing up the idea of the course evaluations. The way it's been worded here is the default would be that course evaluations are excluded. And what I have seen in some of the things that I've done in the past is sometimes that works against us. There are some people that want to have their evaluations included. There are going to be some people, some of our faculty are really going to rise to the occasion. And this particular modality suits them very well. And if we exclude all these evaluations and it takes an effort on the part of some people to have them included, I worry about those people who do a stellar job and lose the opportunity to include them. So what I would like to offer, something that we might do instead, is give everybody the option to include or exclude. So everybody's got to decide what they're going to do, but there's no default.
Okay, so what you're saying is there's no default because the language is there unless the faculty member chooses to include them. But what you're saying is that you have to choose. You have to make a decision. So there's no
default. Somebody's going to miss that. Somebody that's going to say, I really wanted to have these included. And I think we agree with you that, you know, we're not trying to count anything against somebody who makes a good faith effort. If students just aren't real satisfied for whatever reason, we don't necessarily, you know, we don't want to hold that against them. But somebody who's in their comfort zone doesn't realize I've got to do something different to have them included. I think it'd be better to say to everybody, you got to decide up or down. So that's kind of what we would propose. Okay, I think, Sarah, did I cover everything on three? Did I beat that to death enough?
I think that's everything that I had on three. I'm just going, clicking
okay.
Notes.
Okay. All yeah, right, then.
About three, the alternate language.
And really it's in point four, it's the same kind of point, I think, that comes up. There yeah. may be some people who thrive on this idea of, I no longer have to commute, I'm at home, I'm very comfortable in my surroundings, I'm going like gangbusters. Now, perhaps some of the people in STEM disciplines, that won't work out so well because they're accustomed to being in labs, being around computers and so on. Maybe they don't have all that at home, but I could imagine somebody who, I don't know everybody I'm speaking to right now, but I'm just gonna imagine, suppose I'm a music professor and all of a sudden I have this quiet time at my home and I'm able to really think through things and I compose some masterpieces while I'm doing that. I want to make sure that counts. So I think, you know, if we got some kind of a statement, and I think this comes up later on, about the impact that this has on somebody that, as part of the evaluation, that can help us decide how to weigh how somebody performs as a teacher, how somebody performs as a scholar while we're going through this unusual set of circumstances. So I would like to propose that on point four, that we try to craft some language that gives the faculty member some say in how this would work. Because I don't think, we got some incredible faculty, many of whom are really gonna rise to the occasion and do something spectacular. And I don't wanna discount that. I want to make sure that we give them the opportunity to have that count to them and count for their advantage.
Okay, so are you saying something similar to number three, where it would be default, they would get a chance to choose?
Well, and I think later on, there's something that you had about it, like a statement of impact. What did this crisis do to me? How did it impact my working life? I think that's an important document.
Yeah. And,
you know, I know that's something we want to talk about later on as we get to that point. And I think as a faculty member prepares something like that and puts in writing, here's how this once in a lifetime, hopefully, experience impacted me. This was the good thing. You know, maybe I tanked as an instructor. You know, maybe I wasn't cut out for the this online stuff. And I'll use the example of a music faculty member, and I'm probably going to show how ignorant I am about music and the arts. But it would seem to me that teaching piano would not be very easy to do online. And of course, maybe there's a music faculty member who says, oh, Chuck, you're crazy. They have all this great software. You know, it's wonderful. But again, I think from a creative point of view, for some people, and just it occurs to me, it might be a musician, I may be wrong, some people are going to say, this was great. I didn't have to go to a bunch of meetings that I normally go to. I could work with students. I didn't have to maybe have the same office hours that I had to on campus because I kind of wedged them in between my classes. But now online, I can set them up at a time that's more convenient for how I work. I think it's going to be real interesting to see what people say. Overall, obviously nobody wants to go through this, but I think we may still see that there are a number of our colleagues that are going to shine through this. They're really going to do well, and I want to give them the opportunity to get credit for doing that. So there might be somebody who says, I did a bang-up job with my creative activity, my research and my creative activities, but my teaching, I appreciate it if you kind of discount my teaching evaluation, but I sure don't want to throw out everything that I did on research.
Okay, noted.
Okay, all right. And then point number five with this travel situation, I'm going to tap Sarah on the shoulder. My understanding is this is done. The university's taken care of this. Am I correct?
That was my understanding, Chuck, as well. I think there was some messages that went out about this that employees would be reimbursed for refundable travel or for non-refundable travel. I'm not sure if that's not, if you don't think that's the case or if you run into any specific issues where that hasn't happened. But our understanding is that this has already been addressed at the university level.
Okay. So my issue was with this one was some people like myself, like I had said, hey, I want to go to this conference in California. And it was supposed to be like next week. The conference, of course, was canceled. And I still, it was only $400. But my chair said that now I want equipment. That's what I want. And he said he wasn't able to do that. So that's why I put that language in there. And I wasn't the only one because someone else, like for instance, I also do, you know, I do a virtual reality thing. My partner, one of my partners in games media, she's trying to buy the Oculus Rift and she has $1,800 to buy Oculus Rift, you know, the things. Mm-hmm. But they told her the same thing. They're out. There's just no Oculus. Like a lot of people bought them up. And they told her, well, you're just going to have to find some because you have to spend this money. You use it or lose it. Was, I guess, some of the responses we got, or in my case, he just said he didn't know, like, what he could do. So it was sort of like, we have the money, we had targeted the money for travel, but now we want to convert it into something else, such as for equipment. And that's either through, you know, through December 2021. But I'm willing to discuss this, you know, and how we can do it, because I guess some chairs maybe didn't get that memo yet as to coming back or what's going on.
I want to make sure there's one thing that I definitely understand. You're not out the money for that conference.
No, I had not yet paid. Wait, no, yes, I did. I paid for the flight to the conference. So yes, and the airlines are not refunding me. So never paid. So I am out because I paid for it and I was supposed to get reimbursed. But now I said, well, don't reimburse me because now I have a credit with American Airlines, so I'm just going to keep it there. But I never spent my department money, that $400 that was allotted to me. So I asked my chair if I could use it for equipment, and he said he didn't know. He wasn't sure. This was last week, so I don't know if something's changed between now and last week.
And I don't know that anything's changed, but I can tell you everything with the budget is going to be in a state of flux for a while. I understand where you're coming from, that you you're satisfied personally.
You blipped out a little bit there.
Jack, you're breaking up for me. Can you start over?
I am?
Yeah, you were. Just start over on that thought. We can hear you now.
Okay, I guess I just wanted to, you know, understand where Giovanna was vis-a-vis her own personal finances on this. I'm glad to know that, you know, she's satisfied where things are, but I also understand that she wants to be able to spend the money that she thought she had at her discretion. And I think what we're going to see is there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the budget. Mm-hmm. And there may be some strategies that had been in place prior to March 1st, vis-a-vis things like carry forward funds, they're going to be absolutely reversed. And that may be kind of what's, you know, I don't know what color money was promised to you. And
I
think that may be part of
it. Too.
Oh, was it mid-career grant?
Yeah, I got the mid-career grant. Am I going to lose those funds too, is what you're saying?
No, I didn't say that. I know how important those are to faculty excellence. I can't speak for anybody on that, but I don't think there'll be a movement very soon to change anything on the mid-career things. That was a very successful program. I'm not the final word on that, but I think that will be okay. So is that really what the question is? Is it about the mid-career?
No, well, it was about all the grants, like different, because just different. So I had about maybe six people. I mean, UCF does offer a lot of money in different funds. So one was the mid-career, so I was worried about that. That was just me. But then there's also all these other ones that we got, like, for instance, in the fall, the seed money grants. There's also the Marchiavelli, those.
That's not state money, though. Marchiavelli is not state money.
That was the other question, was foundation money. And actually, I had a chair ask me that question, like, okay, this is, we're using foundation money for X. Can we still use it for X? So I guess a lot of people were just concerned overall. So foundation money is not state money, so that one is spent differently?
Yeah, that's certainly my understanding. Yeah, that is actually, the Marchiavelli Fund is a gift from an alumnus.
Oh, okay. So in general, for number five, did you guys want to offer some language?
Well, I think we're going to try to do that. What you've helped us do is better understand what you were trying to say, what the UFF was trying to say.
Yeah, so it's more like concern about like all those little pockets of money, like the seed money, the mid-career grant, money that was offered individuals because of travel money. Like I just said, like my $400. I know it's not much money, but you know, it's still $400.
So it's not so much about travel, it's just about how you all can use grants.
Yes. We can use our grants and money that was allotted to us. Okay. And some people, at least, it depends on the department. Some departments can use that allotted money for travel. Others can use it for equipment or for books, for instance. So that, those type of funds. So I put travel there because that was like probably the first thing that popped into my head. But it's allotted monies to a individual faculty member.
Let me throw something out there and see if I'm coming close here, what we're trying to talk about. What I'm hearing is the faculty would like to know that funds that were committed to them are still there.
Yes.
I mean, to the extent possible. But is that really what the question is?
Yes, that was the question.
And I wish we could give you a firm answer right now, and I can't.
Okay.
But that helps to know exactly what it is we're trying to accomplish here. I appreciate that. So thank you for explaining that. Okay, on point six, there are a couple of things that we wanted to bring up, and Sarah, I may need you to help me explain some of it. The first sentence that says without redeeming accrued leave. Somebody who's doing their duties, meeting their obligations, is not going to have to take any accrued leave. But somebody who misses responsibilities, and I'm not talking necessarily about my customary office hours at my usual time, but they're missing something because they are indeed ill, they should be taking accrued sick leave. And in fact, there's additional sick leave that is available to employees now. So that without redeeming accrued leave is something that we would want to strike. There's leave that's available, and in fact, at this time, there's additional leave that has become available.
So just so I'm clear, you want to strike without redeeming accrued leave.
Right, because working remotely is still work. So if they're working, they of course won't be redeeming accrued leave. They would only redeem the leave if they can't work and they're not working.
Okay, and I wrote that as things change every day. When I initially wrote that,
been changing every day.
Some people were receiving. This is the counselors. So one of the union members there was telling me that they were being forced to use leave, annual leave or sick leave, and so that's why that was there. So yeah. So but now it seems like that was adjusted, especially with the changes we've had just in a few days.
There was also something that I saw. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but I thought there was even something about if somebody, for whatever reason, is just unable to work, they can actually use administrative leave. And it might seem, I don't remember exactly where that was, and I want to see what I can find out about that.
I was... the few emails sent out from either the president's office or HR about that, and that has only currently been extended through April 9th, because that was our original remote work.
Okay.
Until it, until the state work from home went through April 30th. So I know discussions are ongoing right now about whether and how much additional administrative leave to offer. That's being made above our level. And we should hear about that soon. But given the additional federal benefits that have gone into place since April 1st, those are now available. So the need for accrued leave for most of our employees, or I should say definitely most of our immediate faculty employees, will, or it should say the need for administrative leave would be lower, I think, given those other new leave benefits. But anyway, that's just kind of the status of the administrative leave. It's currently available through April 9th for certain people who qualify, and they're still discussing whether and how long to extend it if they do.
Okay.
But we don't have any more update about that. I talked to HR about, you know, a couple hours ago, and that was good. You have the latest info, basically, on that.
Yeah, and for the type of employee that you were mentioning, Giovanna, it would seem like administrative leave, at least through the 9th, is perfect, because my understanding was for people who wanted to work but couldn't work just because of their circumstances. If I'm accustomed to seeing student clients on campus and counseling them, and they can't come to campus anymore, and it's too challenging to work out a full schedule online, maybe they work 25 hours and the other 15 would have been administratively, at least through the 9th. I don't want to go past the 9th, but I think that's really what that was for. And I think there are a lot of things that have been offered, and now the federal government has offered us more to really help employees that are faced with a lot of challenges. So, and there may be times when somebody's sick, whether it's a new sick leave, whether it's emergency family medical leave that's available now, it ought to be used. The whole purpose of providing it is so that it would be used.
All right, so that's noted, number 7.
One more thing on number 6. There are some that we're looking at the phrase near the end, clearly outweigh.
Oh, okay.
And there are some members of the bargaining unit physicians, for example, who got to work. I'm finding that out with family members that are having to deal with difficult circumstances. And there's just sometimes when if we choose a particular profession, we're called upon at that time. So, you know, we're concerned about that last sentence and how it might apply to healthcare providers who are members of the bargaining unit.
Do we have healthcare providers that are part of the bargaining unit? Are we doing?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, could you offer some language then?
Yes. Also might, it applies less in this unit, emergency responders, but some of the physician faculty who would also fall under healthcare provider would also, in this instance, be considered emergency responders. So those are the types of people that, we need on campus, and they can't really work remotely and helping us get through a crisis. Unfortunately, as Chuck said, that's nature of their vocation. We're very grateful to them, but it doesn't really, we can't agree to have them, you know, work remotely, of course, in that instance. If they are sick or they qualify for one of the new, the six reasons under the new emergency paid sick leave. As an employer, we did not have to include them under sick leave. We have chosen to do that.
Okay.
So they will get the sick leave benefit if they're a physician, police officer, whoever it may be. However, as an employer, we have also chosen to not have them included in the EFMLA, the emergency FMLA expansion. So the only reason for that new FMLA leave is basically to stay at home with a son or daughter who's out of school or out of daycare because of the COVID closure, essentially. And the thought there being that we just simply can't sacrifice those people for that purpose, given that, we would love to, but then we would be left with understaffed and unable to meet the crisis as a community. So, of course, we wanted to provide the sick leave because it just makes sense limiting the spread, allowing people to heal, all the good things that go along with that. But when it came to the FMLA, it was a tough decision, but ultimately decided to have just the healthcare providers and emergency responders have that not apply to them. But that should only affect, I think, the physicians in your unit. I don't know that there are emergency responders in your unit. That's more of an AFSCME.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah. So just giving you the update on where we landed on that last week.
Okay.
Okay, we're doing great. We're up to 7.
Good. These are important conversations. It's going slow, but I'm glad we're having them.
No, this is good. I'm actually enjoying this discussion. On 7, your document starts out, once the Florida State and Orange County stay-at-home executive orders expire. What I would like to offer as an alternative is to say something like, once any applicable government mandated restrictions expire. Right now, we certainly UCF is being impacted because Orange County issued a stay at home order, and then later on the governor did the same thing for the entire state. I don't have any inside information whatsoever, but I've heard that there may be things that are talked about at a national level. I hope we don't have to get to that point, but we just thought that if we said something like any applicable government mandated restrictions, that would cover what we know is already in place, plus anything else that might come later.
Okay.
So. I think that was the only thing that we had on 7.
Okay.
Number 8, we may have to have some discussion about number 8. This is a very, very important point, the tenure thing. And this morning I made sure that I had some of my facts right. On March 27th, Interim Provost Johnson sent out an update that said that there would be a tenure clock extension opportunity. And it would, anybody that asked for it would get it. No one would be denied that opportunity if they asked for it. I verified this morning that the form to request a tenure clock extension is now available on the Faculty Excellence website. So it's there. For faculty who are planning to submit their dossier this fall in August, there's a May 15th deadline to request that extension. And a part of that has got to do with the request for outside letters and so on that would go out. For everybody else, it's September 1st, but the form is out there. So the cases that need to be dealt with right away are those that would have put out or would have submitted a dossier in August of 2020. Folks that will be doing this in later years just have to decide by September 1st if they want to apply for that extension.
Okay.
So 8A, at least the first sentence, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a done deal. So this is maybe another example of something that we don't need to include in here because it's already done, and it applies not only to members of the bargaining unit, but faculty in the College of Medicine, for example, who are not members of the bargaining unit, are covered by what Academic Affairs has already done. So it's a much broader thing than has already taken place. The provision for the tenure clock extension applies not only to members of the bargaining unit, but to non-members as well, or non-unit faculty as well. And then the next sentence, depending on what we do with that first part of 8A, the second sentence, if the faculty member later decides to not use the additional year, he or she may revert to the original timetable. I don't think we can say that. Because if somebody submits by May 15th and says, I want an extra year, they can't back out. Because they will have missed the opportunity. So the people in the current year who might make a decision to extend, they can't decide by May 15th, I want a one-year extension, and then come in July 15th and say, you know, I think I'm ready to go. But everybody else, if somebody was to submit a dossier, say in August of 2022, and they submitted this now and said, I want to go till 2023, all they would have to do later on is go up early.
Okay.
They don't even have to formally send anything in. They just go up early.
Check, so you can hear me. So the only reason for adding that line there was because in the past we've had, particularly in my college, people who wanted to go up early because they had everything, they had a book, they had articles, and they were told no. So I wanted to put that in there in case, I mean, as you can imagine, because of COVID, there was a lot of panic, immediate panic. I just got texts in the middle of the night, emails like begging non-tenure faculty asking, or tenure track faculty asking for if I can, this was before also the provost email, or some actually even after, because some people just completely missed
it. There have been a lot of emails. It's hard to keep them all straight.
Yeah. So adding this, so a lot of people asked, several of tenure track asked me that. They're like, well, what if later on I, you know, they're in a state of panic right now. They're already worried about tenure. And then they're thinking as if I, well, if I take it, can I take it back later? And then some are concerned, there's a lot of paranoia. So some are concerned that the dean will tell them no. So the reason, and you're right, you're absolutely right. You can always ask and request to go up early. But some people have been told no in the past, and they're telling other tenure track people to not take this or take it or realize what the problem is going to be. So this line there was to make them, we can also change the language or just say that requesting is possible. Requesting going up early is always possible. It's just reminding people that they can do that. It's not like nothing's set in stone, especially when, you know, you have a global pandemic, what can you do?
Well, this may be a bit of an aside. If you're aware of a situation where someone is told, you know, you can't go up, I think we want to know about that.
Okay, I'll give you some some names.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that a chair or director might say, if I were you, I would think twice about this. I'm not convinced that you're ready, but the application is from the faculty member, not from the chair.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I've been a chair. So you give advice to people. Yeah. Sometimes they take it, sometimes they don't. But I don't know, if that were going on, I think that's something that our office would want to know, and my guess is Jana would want to know.
Oh, okay. That's
good. As well, I mean, we should look at the, you know, exactly what it says in the regulation. The chair gets to vote and, you know, gets to write a statement about what they think, whether they think it's a good idea or not. But I don't know that they can say, no, I refuse to send out requests for outside letters for you. I don't know that you can do that. So if that's going on, I for one would like to know about it.
Oh, okay. We'll bring those, some of these, yeah. So we'll bring a few of those to your attention, but at a later date.
Okay. Then the next point, B, upon the award of tenure and promotion, the promotion increment and salary will be retroactive to the effective date when the promotion would have occurred without this 1 year delay. This is something we just can't do because of, just for budgetary reasons, you know, if a faculty member asks for the additional time and they're granted, and they're telling them right now, all you got to do is ask and you got it. When that day changes, they're on a different schedule, they would have the opportunity, as we've already talked about, to submit early at some point and maybe get back on the schedule they were originally on. But from a budget perspective, I just don't see how we could do this now.
Chuck, I'll add, I wasn't thinking about this when I first read it, but in general, as state employees, we can't give extra pay for additional duties not performed. So I'm not sure if that would forbid this specific instance, but for example, that's why state employees don't get bonuses, because there's a statutory prohibition against it. And so I'm afraid that if we went back and then tried to say, okay, for this year, which we've already paid you, we're going to go back and pay you more for work you've already done, work already completed, there's no additional work that we're compensating for, that we may run into a bar through the Florida statute. Just caveating, I have not looked into that law with a specific proposal in mind, but just in general, there's a prohibition against additional compensation in the Florida statutes, and that comes up kind of a lot in our work. So I'm putting that out there.
Okay, so we may want to reword A a little bit, but overall we agree with A to a great extent. B is problematic. C is one that I think sounds like a very interesting idea. If money's been allocated to a faculty member as part of a startup package and they're not able to spend some of that money in the 2 years or 3 years that they were given and they want a little bit of extra time, as long as funds are available, that seems like something that would be good to do. That's continuing to invest in our faculty. But I think we may have to put something in there about subject to availability of funds. Sarah, anything else on 8C in particular?
No, Chuck, that's all I had.
Okay. Okay, point number 9. A question about sabbaticals. And as we've looked at that, we're very sensitive about sabbaticals and how important they are to our faculty, how important they are to the university, because it enhances our faculty when they participate in these things. We think that this is probably going to have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. So for example, there's some folks that may have left for a sabbatical that technically started in August of 2019, may have left it actually sometime during the summer, began to work elsewhere with colleagues. Maybe they had to come home. Maybe they found out in early March that they were going to have to cut those plans short a little bit, but from at least August through the end of February, they were able to do everything that they planned to do. There may be some hardship, and the university incurred additional expenses to replace them in the classroom. The college is really foot of the bill for those folks. There may be some faculty that didn't start a sabbatical. Maybe it's a one semester sabbatical and it's for the spring only. And depending upon what it is the faculty member was proposing to do, it might be something that could be looked at on a case-by-case basis. But a blanket statement that says anybody that was approved for a sabbatical either last year or this year for next year can extend or defer, I don't think that will work. There may be some people who are able to defer. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time. There are a lot of examples of people that defer. Extensions for people that have been out for a number of months, have been compensated over that time. Departments have had to backfill to cover their responsibilities. I think it's going to be really, really tough to do. So what we would like to suggest is we say something about looking at these on a case-by-case basis. Some people went away. Some people went to areas that are considered hotspots or may have been hotspots a couple of months ago. I don't know whether we had anybody that was in China in January. It's entirely possible that we did. There are some people who had a sabbatical or professional development leave and they were working domestically. They may even have been working in town. And they said, I'm going to stay home and work on a textbook, for example, which is a fine thing to do. this may have been perfect for them. So I think we need to look at these things on a case-by-case basis instead of saying, you know, for 2 years, you know, we're just going to extend or defer whatever anybody wants to do. So that's what we suggest on point number 9.
Okay. I just wanted to give you a couple examples. So this is true, MC Santana, she's the director of women's studies. Like, she was in Spain for her sabbatical, but she had just got there. She got there in late January, and it was already spreading in Italy, and there were already fears and stuff, but she actually got out right before, I think a week or days before Trump said, okay, all European ban. But she was there to do her research. She was actually had a grant with the Spanish government to be there. And all of that got cut. And so she had to return immediately. And then once she arrived, she had to go under 2-week quarantine, her child, she has adult children, and they were bringing food to her house, but not actually seeing her. So she didn't have access to her computer, her work, everything was cut short. That's just one example. So I see what you mean about the fall people. So I think in particular, I was thinking about the spring 2020 people who had started to make that good faith effort to do their work, and then suddenly everything gets cut short. I think somebody else was in Maldives or something, and that also got completely canceled. And there were some people who wanted to go to China, but they were realizing that it sounded pretty bad, so they just never left in the first place. So a couple cases like that. So no, but I understand they're, it's reasonable to say a case by case basis.
Okay, super. Number 10. Right now there are some places on campus that have already been sanitized because we know, for example, people who have been found to be positive went to class there, worked there. There's some things that have been sanitized. We want to make sure that anything that we say about sanitization is very clear. The third floor of Milliken Hall. Is this being recorded? Yes, it is. It is probably housekeeping on that floor is not what any of us would want it to be. I'm sure Sarah and Charlie and Brianna would agree with me that we would hope that it would be
light.
Would be better than that.
And Yovana, you're on a return. Sorry, a return to work rather than what's going on now when no one's there.
Yeah, more of a return to work. I mean, a few people brought this up that they were very concerned about. They just felt afraid to come, and this was especially early on. I mean, this was just even 2 weeks ago. It feels like months ago when they don't know how it's transmitted, and it was when they were talking about it could be on ceramic, on metals. They don't know. Now they're saying this thing about it's all in the air. So just a concern about when we return to work, will everything be sanitized, or at least with some bleach thrown around public areas, like bathrooms and floors?
I think when we get closer to a return, we'll have a lot more specifics from facilities about the cleaning that will be done. I think we're still far enough away from a kind of campus-wide return that, frankly, those conversations, if they've been happening, it hasn't made its way to me. I know that they're thinking about it, of course, but we just don't have enough concrete information about their plans. But of course, they are thinking about it, and we'll be happy to pass that on. I think we would all love to commit to that we're returning to a clean workplace. Part of the problem, though, is that since it's a virus spread by other human beings, we're somewhat limited in that capacity. If someone brings it back to work with them, and we don't know about it, it's hard to kind of make provisions for that. And I don't know that they're going to be doing a deep clean with bleach every single night, for example, of every single building on campus, because I just don't think that we have the staff for that, even at full level. So we're happy to provide that information when we have it. We just don't have it right now. So we may have to revise that language to either be aspirational, or maybe by the time we finalize it, we will have more information about what the plans are. But I don't think that we have any concrete ideas right now.
Okay. No, I like the idea of the aspirational language for return to work.
I took a quick look at the clock. We have kind of used the allotted time that we have, and I'd like to do two things really quick. I guess what we can do is both sides can call for a caucus, and we'll have a little time to work on any modifications that we want to propose. I certainly want to take a shot at points 1 through 10, and we'll try to actually come up with something for the entire document for the next time and get it to you before we get together again to do this. This has been, I think, very helpful. It's very instructive just to know who's talking to you and what are they saying. It makes us able to understand a little bit better about, you know, what we're trying to do here. So I'm happy to accept an assignment for us to come back with a new draft of this and try to get it to you before we would have another impact bargaining session. Is that okay?
We're meeting on Thursday for Article 23. Did you want to discuss this as well on Thursday, or do you want to do this?
We should be noticed separately.
Oh yeah, we needed a separate notice. Charlie, could you confirm?
Separate notice. Yeah, it's got to have enough.
Could you unmute yourself? 3 days? Okay, 3 days. Okay, so we can't do it today. Could we set up a bargaining session, impact bargaining for Friday? Yes, okay. All right, good. Friday? Yeah, why not?
Friday's looking a little hectic for somebody. If Sherry's completely well, it might be no problem. What time are you thinking of on Friday?
On Friday, I'm open all day.
But Monday, the only time that I...
Or Monday.
All right, Monday at this time next week is perfect, I think.
Monday the 13th?
So much better than Friday.
Okay, so but Monday from...
Same time, same bat channel.
Okay. That works. So Monday the 13th at 3 o'clock, 3 to 4:30?
Okay.
And then for the other points, because it's 23, how do you propose we look over those?
Well, what I will try to do is get something to you with suggestions on all of these.
Okay. All right.
We talked about some of them. I'll try to, there's some notes that I've got on other ones. I'll try to get those incorporated into alternative language that we'll send to you.
Okay, all right, so we'll have all that before Monday's meeting, Monday's impact session meeting. Okay.
2:30 on Monday, just kidding. We'll try to do better than that. But.
So 3 o'clock on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the meeting, yes. Okay.
Can we set aside 2 hours for it, like 3 to 5 p.m.? Or you think an hour, 90 minutes is fine?
Team?
I have the time.
I can't hear Charlie.
I don't know why my space bar is not working. Whatever. I prefer 90 minutes, but that gives us some time afterwards to talk. But
oh, yeah, that's true. I agree. Okay.
Yeah. So 90 minutes.
Okay.
The language. All right, super. And I'll have it. Okay.
All right. Well, we will work on getting all that. Excellent. Thank you all very, very much for your time this afternoon. Please, everybody, stay healthy. It is so nice to see so many people at one time. Been a while since I've had that luxury.
Yeah. Okay, good.
But yeah, please, everybody, stay safe, and we will talk to everybody again on mostly on Thursday, I guess, and maybe everybody on Monday.
Okay. Oh, and just my team, just make sure and log into our Zoom, the one that I sent you, the second one. So that's my so then we'll meet in caucus really quick. Okay. But I'll see you guys soon. I'll see
All right. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right.